They went to each other. They had really hard that time. And this stuff's actually, you know, it's actually pretty touching, mm-hmm. too.
Well, admittedly, I mean, you know, for a while wasn't a fan of this, but I, you know, through our discussions and watching this again, I do appreciate a bit more. I do appreciate the stunt of it more.
Right, exactly.
I do appreciate the concept. And
mm-hmm. It was. All Back to the Future 2 is, you know, it's not a scientific...
It's not sci-fi. It's not traditional. It's not literary sci-fi.
Exactly. It's not scientifically accurate.
Yeah.
It's which actually part one and part three are, in my opinion, actual scientifically accurate movies. But this is, I think, part two. Why another reason I like it so much is it's the most high concept of the three. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not a science fiction accurate movie. It's a high concept movie, which, you know,
yeah,
it's not being John Malkovich, but
no, that's about as high concept as you can get.
But it's more of a high concept movie than it is a science fiction adventure story, which you know, and you're still really entertained by it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is actually pretty heartbreaking
stuff. My favorite part it's coming up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about it. My favorite part of this movie is coming up.
Right.
That's when they go back to
absolutely.
1955.
That's
the most entertaining.
That's
part
the most
of this
brilliant
thing.
That's some of the most brilliant movie making.
Genius concept.
That's some of the most brilliant movie making I've ever. Anyway, but that scene with Marty at George McFly's tombstone, I thought was pretty mm-hmm. heartbreaking. I think the music had a lot to do with it. The music is a little over the top.
Yeah,
but
admittedly, you could argue that is a detriment to Sylvester's
right.
style.
Well, the thing is, what I thought was really interesting when I first found out about this was that Robert Zemeckis at the very beginning of the making of the very first movie, he said to Alan Silvestri that he didn't have a lot of money, he didn't have a lot of big images.
Uh-huh.
Make the music as big and as over the top and as fun as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he delivered, obviously. So, but anyway, why I like that scene of the tombstone is that the music makes it over the top, but at the same time it makes it very emotional as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everything about this trilogy is, you know, is just slightly over the top, but that's just mm-hmm. but that's one of the more fun things about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a
dun,
comedy.
Dun,
I mean,
dun,
it's
dun.
You know, it's comedy and melodrama,
exactly.
basically.
Right.
And
doesn't this music, by the way, Brian? By the way, this music, does this not sound a little bit like This Island Earth, right here? That little there's a little.
There's kind of that.
There's a little I don't know, for some reason I thought of This Island Earth when I heard that music.
Well,
I don't know.
I can talk about my experiences with This Island Earth on E.T.
Right, exactly.
Oh
yeah, absolutely.
Now I have
absolutely
real issues with that.
Right. Well, what movie
anybody who saw Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie should.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway,
this, I think that shot was stolen from Roger Rabbit. Do you remember in Roger Rabbit when he doesn't get a clue until he looks at that magnified picture of R.K. Maroon, and he sees the will in his pocket? Do you remember that?
It's been such a long time since
I've seen
Roger Rabbit.
Right.
Don't remember.
Anyway, I personally think that's a little bit of an homage to Roger Rabbit right there when he uses the magnifying glass to see the sports almanac and Biff's coat pocket, because Eddie Valiant that's how he gets a clue, is he sees mm-hmm. he sees the will in R.K. Maroon's jacket pocket with the magnifier. I personally think that's a homage to Roger Rabbit, but
of course now I have to watch that movie.
Of course you do. Now you have to watch Roger Rabbit.
I have to watch it.
You have to, which, by the way, a special edition DVD of that is going to be coming out soon, according to Bob Zemeckis. So
yeah,
that'll be fun.
That is coming out soon. I don't remember what the date is.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun to go. That'll be fun to, you know, rent anyway. Maybe
yeah.
I'm not. all that intrigued about buying it. But anyway, I really do like all this exposition right here. I think this was really interesting. And I was 13 years old when I first saw this, but I was able to follow every bit of it. As complicated as this movie got, I loved the fact that I was able to follow every minute of this, and I was absolutely captivated with how involved the story got.
Now, this...
Is this Fistful of Dollars?
This is Fistful of Dollars, okay, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I thought.
I'm pretty sure that's the one. It's either that or A Few Dollars More.
Right.
I know it's not The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm pretty sure it's Fistful of Dollars, if I remember that movie correctly.
He is such a sleazeball in this movie.
Yeah.
He is such a sleaze.
I wouldn't mind being in his place at that time, but anyway.
I love his, what the hell? that line cracks me up for some. What the hell? Because and the thing is, people could regard his question of how did you get past my security as a movie mistake. But do you know how he got up there, Brian?
No.
The Flying DeLorean. The Flying DeLorean landed on top of the Pleasure Paradise, or Pleasure Palace, and that's how he got past the security. That could very easily be misconstrued as a big movie mistake, but that's how he got past the security downstairs.
I never thought about that.
What the hell?
I guess I never really thought about how he got up there.
Right.
Even though they acknowledge
They do, or but what Beth does, and...
They at least asked that question, how he got up there. Mm-hmm. I guess I never really cared how he got up there.
But but just so you know, Brian, the DeLorean flies in part two, just so you know that.
I think I've noticed that this
point. Did you know that? Okay.
I think I realized that.
You knew that?
The
DeLorean,
thank you, Ron.
The DeLorean actually flew? The DeLorean actually, never mind. I'm sorry.
Oh, you mean it wasn't special effects?
The DeLorean, no. Do you remember when Doc says in part three, the DeLorean actually flew? Sorry.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
That was my little homage to part three.
That's right. Okay.
But anyway, the DeLorean actually flew, yes.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
With special effects, because I don't...
Okay.
DeLoreans couldn't fly.
Yeah, I'd be confused there for a minute.
That is special effects.
They'd done a real flying DeLorean.
Because DeLoreans couldn't fly in 1989 like they can now in 2002.
2003,
excuse me.
Be more
correct. This is my distant relative. I don't see any resemblance. Thomas F. Wilson is really funny in these movies.
He is. Everybody's really funny in these
but
movies.
But Thomas F. Wilson, I've not... What else has he done, Brian? I'm not...
You know what? Don't know.
I think he's a really underappreciated talent, especially in these movies. I think he's actually really... He's actually, you know... Because he's a good villain. He's a good, fun villain.
Yeah. Well, comedy's never gotten much respect at all.
Right.
I mean, especially comedy like this.
Right.
I mean, you know, this trilogy is one of the great trilogies or great movie series of all time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
Yeah. Or one of the more popular ones, anyway.
No, it's one of the great ones.
Well,
it is one of the most popular ones, but it is one of the great ones, too.
Right.
With Star Wars and Godfather and...
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
The thing is that the aging makeup isn't all that great. Like I said before,
it's better on this one.
But the performance is what made it believable. I think I love how he falls for that every time. What the hell is that? I love how he falls for that every time.
Yeah. Yeah, John Woo could have directed this.
Right.
You would see flying doves. You would see
slow motion.
Yeah. You would have... Yeah, guys would just be...
But this is more really
great.
And
Marty McFly would have been played by Chow Yun-Fat.
Exactly.
Or Nicolas Cage. Anyway.
But this is really great. I think this is really great. More great Alan Silvestri right here.
Yeah. He's a very underrated composer. I mean, he's never won an Oscar. He was nominated for Forrest Gump.
He was nominated for Forrest Gump.
I think that was it.
If I'm not mistaken, that was it.
By
the way, one of my favorite touches...
He might have been nominated for this. I don't remember what else was out that year.
He wasn't nominated for any of the Back to the Future movies. So, of course, we can always look that up later on.
Yeah.
But...
if he was going to be nominated for anything, he would have been nominated for the first one.
I was talking earlier about, you know, being that dumb 13-year-old kid who just was so in the moment here. I was totally in suspense here when I first saw this. Anyway, one of my favorite Silvestri touches of all time was probably in Castaway, how he never scores the movie until after he gets off the island. I thought that was really ingenious.
That was, and you know, it's funny. Well, we really should be talking about
right,
that
absolutely.
Movie on that movie, but,
right? But that was a really stroke of genius.
That was a stroke of genius
on the filmmakers.
And it's something that is funny. You don't really notice it.
I was totally fooled here, by the way, being that dumb 13-year-old kid. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Marty McFly.
Oh, yeah.
He jumps.
You really.
What the hell?
More... He really is the biggest fool
yeah, exactly.
in the world. I mean...
Well, of course, you know, I probably would have reacted the same way having. You don't believe this. We have to go back to. I don't believe it. More the music. I love how the music kicks in again. And like you know, it's okay
yes.
to have fun again.
One of the great themes.
Yeah, exactly.
At least one of his greatest theme.
Without question, Alan Silvestri's best theme ever.
If not, one of the great themes.
Right. This is more.
Almost a coincidence, or it's just an unbelievable.
Exactly, another joke. Another joke to point out just how
you know what.
Just
it's
how
not
unnecessary.
An unbelievable coincidence.
Exactly.
And, of course, you see the 1885 in there.
Right.
Sort of.
But that was, of course, just another joke to point out just how unnecessary this entire movie is.
Yeah, we're going back to the original movie, basically.
Mm-hmm. No, I was talking about the fact that Doc was going on and saying, that's such a, that must have just been a cosmic coincidence or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And that was just a joke just to point out, I think, by the filmmakers, just to point out that this was totally unnecessary. Mm-hmm. But, and the only reason we're revisiting these characters is just for fun.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean,
as long as the filmmakers know that, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, let's be honest. They didn't have too many lofty... high-browed pretensions when they made this movie.
No, they didn't. But you know what? They knew
these movies.
They knew that going into this.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
This is a neat scene.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked this scene a lot.
I like the segue from this scene to the other scene.
Right.
I like the way Marty enters next scene.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. That's an entrance right there. But
Yeah.
This is actually a lot of exposition in this movie. A lot more exposition in this movie than there are in the other two movies. Of course, that's the nature of the story, though. There's in part two. Part two is so much that needs to be explained, I think. But you know, at the same time, you know, as long as it's done, I love that.
I love
it. Yeah, he's like,
this is funny. It's like.
But as long as the exposition is done in a way that's entertaining, in a way that I don't mind. So, but yeah, that running up and down the street thing is really funny.
He says that this is heavy, doesn't it?
Right. No, he said no. That is one of my favorite moments in part three when Doc says, or no, Marty says, "Great Scott," and Doc says, "I know this is heavy." That was my favorite moment in part three. But that's a great entrance right there. That's obviously another obvious joke that's just Doc.
He looks like a beatnik.
Right.
I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
At least my movie version of what.
But you know what?
Like.
Those are some of the cheapest walkie-talkies I've ever seen in my life, and I don't think they would have. But, you know, again, you have to.
Now you have, like, now it'd be like.
But those are the walkie-talkies I used to run around my backyard in, or the backwoods in with all my friends, and, like, say, you know, we. But anyway.
Well, now it'd be, if you were doing this in the modern day, it'd be like those cell phones where you can, like...
But anyway, I think that's more of a joke, I think, anyways, the cheap little walkie-talkies. I think that's...
I swear I've seen that house in a different movie. I think it was Forever
This could very well be a... This could
another
very,
Elijah Wood movie, by
This
the way.
Could very well be a widely used lot, you know, like in 1950s.
Yeah.
For a lot of period pieces set in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
You would think
that Biff would actually notice Marty.
There's a lot of times.
Inconspicuous.
He's trying to be inconspicuous, but he's really bad at being inconspicuous. Yeah. That's what it is. And I think that's a joke. I think that's another like little. What is his name? The guy that voiced Roger Rabbit? Because there he is again. I don't know if you recognize him, Brian.
No, I don't.
The manure. I remember that. But yeah, Marty is really bad at being inconspicuous.
Yeah.
We should point that out.
Really is horrible at.
He is,
And dreadful.
Michael J. Fox, you're a great actor, but you're just. I think that was a joke. That was supposed to be a joke anyway, a little subconscious thing anyway. Another thing you're supposed to suspend your disbelief with, but.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, part two is more of high concept than any of the other two.
Now this reminds me of Adaptation, but.
Mm-hmm. Well,
purely coincidental way that they've got part sort of with
one
of the characters in the back of hiding in the back of a car.
I think you're the only one who thinks that. But anyway,
I'm probably the only one who would ever notice.
I love that Leah Thompson is able to go from like totally flaky in 1985 to like this strong-willed, teeny bopper. Kind of girl in the 50s. That's just a great way to like just show how good of her performance in all three movies is. Everyone who all the supporting actors in the trilogy are just phenomenal. I think.
Oh yeah,
because.
The cast is wonderful.
Because all Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd are doing through all three movies are just being themselves. You know, they're just being Marty. They're playing one character the entire trilogy.
Well, Christopher Lloyd is
right. Michael J. Fox
has to play more.
At one point, he has to play his daughter and his son, but that's about it.
And his great older self.
But
thinking of in part three where he plays Seamus McFly, grandfather or something.
But for the most part, you know, it's like Thomas F. Wilson and Leah Thompson and Crispin Glover did a really good job with that in part one.
Yeah.
Of just switching characters like you're switching clothes, Or going well. I mean, obviously they had a lot of prep time in between takes or whatever, but just the way they go back and I really do think it's very it's very much like watching Nicolas Cage in Adaptation or Eddie Murphy in Bowfinger. I love watching actors play more than one role in a movie. That is just I get such a kick out of that.
And apparently Jeremy Irons in Dead Ringers, although I've never seen that movie.
Right. But I get such a kick out of watching.
Trying to think of some other movies.
Out of watching actors play more than one character. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
it is a trip to watch.
That is such a trip.
As good as like Cage or.
Mm-hmm. Or the people
in these movies.
Or the actors in these movies. That is.
Yeah.
That is.
Lee.
That's another great callback to part one.
That looked like a special effects throw.
Yeah, that was a little bit of an optical, cheesy little optical there, but.
Wonder why they need to do an optical for. Two biffs.
Yeah, exactly.
But still.
I remember hearing a gasp, though, in the theater. At least a little bit. You could feel a little bit of a shudder going through the theater when. People were first seeing this for the first time. They were watching Biff interact, young Biff, 1950s Biff interact with older Biff. I think that was actually a really special movie moment, I think, to get to watch something like this.
Well, it's one of those things that was just, you never really saw it before in a lot of movies.
No, you haven't. No, you didn't.
Well, Dead Ringers came out before this, but the audience for this at the time wasn't watching that movies like that,
and it was just a real shudder when old Biff hands young Biff the almanac and get it now, Marty, get it. Oh, crap!
No, you don't have a safe. Get a safe.
Get a safe. I'm going to back away from the microphone a little bit because I know it can pick me up from over here. But
the repetition,
I think that's a kind of a running gag in Bob Zemeckis movies, because I remember how much repetition there was in Forrest Gump and like all the like the callbacks from like just a couple minutes ago and just like you know, I think that's actually kind of a little bit of, I think Bob Zemeckis enjoys doing something, stuff like that, really obvious but actually really clever at the same time.
Well, I mean, it's all in service, you know, I mean, it all has to do with the story, too. I mean, you know, it all works in service of the story.
Absolutely.
Or it doesn't work,
and it's all
depending on how you look at.
And it's all really clever, and it's all really cleverly, brilliantly, funny done.
Yeah.
Done in a really fun way, excuse me. But, perfect. More great physical, just Michael J. Fox's physicality of the role is just, you know, he's really exaggerated gestures and whatnot are really fun to watch. All this jumping around and here comes probably the most fun part of the movie is the enchantment of the sea dance and
upcoming part in general, not just the enchantment.
Yeah, the entire third act is
third act is just absolutely wonderful.
Right. I love the doc here right of the bike. It's funny.
He's still got the tags on. I guess.
Which is another. Just
the line, the great line.
Oh yeah.
Great line coming up.
I love this. Kid. Great callback to part one, of course.
Yeah.
But, all these really great subtle character moments with Doc are all just really great Christopher Lloyd stuff, I think. Just like how...
I do like this. I have to say, this is probably my favorite scene is coming up right here with Doc Brown and
Doc
himself.
This is actually
just a really nice moment for the character.
You know, because there hasn't been a whole lot of heart in part two so far.
Yeah.
You know?
This is probably the
most you get out of it. But it's actually a really great... It's a really great... Yeah. But
I can't see Biff listening to Mambo.
Well, you know, I mean... you know, he's a villain, but he's also an idiot. You know, he's also, you know, he's going to do dorky things. He thinks he's cool, but he's actually a dork, you know. That's just more great character stuff by Thomas F. Wilson, I guess. But like I was saying, there isn't nearly as much heart in part two as there is in part two and or part one and part three.
Yeah.
And this is actually a
I think part three is the most heart of any of them.
Right.
I really do.
I think, in my opinion...
Part one's got some, but it's not
in my opinion, part one has the most of it, has the most heart. But, you know, this, I think, is a really great moment just to emotionally connect the audience with the story again.
Yeah.
You know? And it's another really great Gee Whiz moment as well for... I really do enjoy Christopher Lloyd's performance throughout this entire trilogy.
Yeah.
He is just really phenomenal in all three
movies. He's not afraid to go over the top.
No, he's not.
He's not afraid to go over the top and go over the top.
Despite his Despite his theater actor training.
He's got some very broad comedy in this
absolutely.
Trilogy. But especially in the first one.
Right.
But in this one too.
But no, you really do have an affection for his character. I grew to have the most affection for his character through part two, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess I like the relationship he develops with Mary Steenburgen's character in
part three. That was a big
part of the reason why I really feel like that has the most emotion.
Right.
of the entire exactly. trilogy.
But, you know, I just personally, Scooter really having a real affection for his character through part two because, you know, mm-hmm. especially after Marty screws up the way he does.
Yeah.
He's really there for him. And, he, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, he's, but anyway, that's a little Crispin Glover there.
Yep.
Obviously. I mean, they couldn't use the actor who was doing him in actually did a really good impersonation of him in 2015, but of course he was under a ton of
makeup,
old
too,
age makeup.
So it's like you can get away with it.
You could get away with it, but you can't get away with you know, anyway.
Ooh, blah, blah. Blah. Well, that gag's coming up in a minute.
Cliche. 1950s
pouring the alcohol
thug
into
is,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. God, didn't that guy ever have hair? Anyway.
He's got more hair than he does in 1985.
Yeah. That was a great line in part one though. I was like, God, didn't that guy ever have hair?
Yeah.
Anyway. But Marty McFly being really bad at being inconspicuous again.
Yeah, it's something he doesn't really.
But I think that's a joke, actually. I think,
yeah.
Personally, I think that's kind of a.
Yeah, I could buy that.
This is actually. He's like, I'm being sneaky.
Then again.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to suspend your disbelief for a lot of this.
Well, for the entire trilogy
for
in
the,
general. I mean, you
well,
have to buy...
And for the entire,
well, you have to buy into the fact that...
those are really cheap goggles, too, that are working really well, by the way.
Binoculars. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Yeah. It's getting heavy, Marty.
Mm-hmm.
No, but no, my favorite moment in part three is Marty saying, "Great Scott," and...
Yeah.
This is heavy. That was my absolute favorite moment in part three. Now, who plays Mr. Strickland again, Brian?
That is... That is James Tolkien.
Uh-huh.
Not Tolkien. Tolkien.
Tolkien. Who actually does a really good job playing, you know... All the different roles, and you know, well, actually,
it's basically the same role.
It's the same role,
just
in
a little bit different.
In part
makeup.
One and part two, but like, and then I love that he's a sheriff. I love that he's the town sheriff in part three. That was actually really,
I mean, it's in his vein,
right? I think that was really great. That was actually really, clever on the filmmakers' part to make him the town sheriff in part three.
It's either really clever or just very lazy writing.
Exactly.
But it could go either way.
Exactly.
We tend to lean towards the clever
because,
aspect,
you know, because we have too much affection for this for these movies, so you know.
Yeah, it's more clever than lazy.
Yeah.
You don't want to see lazy writing.
For some reason, I can't help but think of my mom when she was younger when I see Lorraine McFly. I can't help but, you know, because my mom started smoking around then. She started smoking when she was like 16 or 17. And I just, and she was actually really, she's a beautiful woman now, but I can just imagine her being that pretty when she was in high school. Anyway.
Well, let's.
I love my mom.
Yes, let's not. Okay.
Anyway.
Move on. Let's move on.
Do you have a problem with me? Being loving my mom, Brian?
No, there's no problem with
you have a problem with me
no
having
problem with
anyway,
her.
I
love
my
mom too.
For crying out loud, Brian.
Anyway. I don't mention it, but yes, I do.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I don't have a problem with it.
Thank you. This is actually another one of my favorite moments. For some reason, I don't know why. But
it's a very funny scene. The way it plays out.
It's funny and it's really simple too. There's nothing over the top about it. It's supposed to be a suspenseful moment, which for the most part
it
works that way, and it's not a big special effects moment, and it's not a really broad over the top comedy moment.
Yeah,
it's just supposed to be fun,
like some of the other
like most of the movie, like most of the rest of the movie is. It's just supposed to be a fun, quiet moment when you know you know, the audience is supposed to be going, you know, the audience is supposed to be laughing at one point, and then they're supposed to be, you know, gasping at the next, which, you know, it works at that, and it works on that level.
This is painful coming up.
Yeah, right here. Great, another great Michael J. Fox face right there. he's actually quite a good silent movie actor.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
He really could have been given the silent era.
I think he could have been.
Of course, in some instances, I kind of wish the silent era would come back.
Amen to that.
In comedy, especially. But anyway,
amen to that. Filmmakers, if you're listening out there.
Yes.
Anyway.
Silent movies.
Right.
At least when you can't come up with a script. Ooh la la.
Ooh la la. Ooh la la. More great Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I love that. I love the, what's going on in the background.
Yeah.
That is just absolutely. That's obviously Crispin Glover's replacement. They're obviously refilming that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a really expensive, because if that was an optical from the first movie, that would have looked really bad. So obviously they refilmed that.
Well, they probably didn't have this angle for the first one.
Oh, no, of course not. Absolutely. That's another good point. Oh, man, about to deck this.
This is, upcoming is probably, at least in the first movie.
Yeah, that's from, part
favorite.
One. That's from part one, though. Right?
Use that. Of the theme.
Right. But no, that little spin around, in my opinion, I think that little spin around, but done by Biff, when he like falls down, I think that's from part one.
Yeah.
I think. That's from part one.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because.
Yeah.
Because actually, that looks a little. That film. I mean, no offense, but that film just looks a little bit more dated. That's obviously new, but. Yeah. That's a great. I mean, just. Brian and I can't say enough about what was done with the third act of this movie.
Yeah.
It just makes it so worth it to what's CPR? You that looked like it hurt. I like what
his wallet.
I think he took his wallet. But anyway, Mr. Fusion. Great little homage to Mr. Coffee. They fall for it every time.
Fool me 7 or 8 times. Definitely shame on you.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, that seems to be the way that joke goes.
Uh-huh. Another really fun running gag, I guess. Just something that's obviously...
What the hell was that?
Yeah. What the hell is that? By the way, I have to remember that next time I'm face to face with somebody who wants to beat the crap out of me.
How often is that? I mean, you're in your 20s, Haynes.
I know. Well,
or Ron. Aw. It's just so beautiful.
Here, Brian, here's a tissue.
I don't need a tissue. Don't
sure?
listen to
you
him.
You look like you're getting a little teared up there.
No, I'm not.
I love you.
Don't mind him. It's just a movie.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I think, personally, I think that's a little homage to Indiana Jones.
Probably.
I love Billy Zane's line. How the hell did he change his tone so fast?
This is a fun... I like this sequence. It's like,
this is a great, 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 great sequence.
Yeah. This is really music. Great soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Trying to be good.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Love Christopher Lloyd's line right here. Then get out of there, you idiot. Then get out of there. He's like, he's so frustrated with how
paradox. Perfect.
He's just had it up to here with how much Marty is screwing up. But he's gonna stick with him. The guy with the hat, where is he? I think he took your wallet.
Who is that?
I don't know.
It seems like he's somebody. A lot of the people in this movie, or these movies in general, you know you've seen them somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's Billy Zane, too.
Yeah. How the hell did he change his clothes so fast?
How did he get on stage so fast?
Yeah, but
make sure he doesn't see you, man.
Right, exactly. But I love how Marty just keeps slipping out of, you know, being seen. That's kind of fun. Because he knows he's gonna. He remembers his dance up on stage, like step for step. He knows exactly when he's gonna turn around and
mm-hmm.
notice him on the backstage or what. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's kind of fun. But, yeah, the duck walk. Now, this is actually a little... That's obviously an optical effect.
Yeah.
Was that him from the first movie, or was that refilmed, do you think? Do you think that was from the first...
Some of it could have been...
Do you think they actually went through all the trouble cutting him out of the first movie and, like, putting him at that different angle? I have no idea.
I don't know.
But, anyway... I mean, it's really obvious optical effect, but nonetheless, it's one of the more...
This is obviously from the first
one. You know what, I think they probably refilmed a lot the entire thing, but it's probably half and it's probably a little bit of one and probably a little bit of the new footage as well. I think it's both. Anyway, yeah.
That's from the first movie.
Mm-hmm. You did a little smirk at the audiences. Yeah. This is from
but
the first
kids
movie.
Are gonna love it. Yeah, I like how it looks.
He's like,
this is obvious.
You know what I love to do is I love to watch the first movie and like imagine that Michael J. Fox is up in the rafters, like, you know, saving Marty McFly from Part One. I love to imagine that whenever I'm watching Part One now. And like at this part in Part One, he's like the other Marty McFly is right outside.
Yeah.
Watch. I love thinking that whenever I watch Part One now.
Mm-hmm. I love how he gets out of this.
Uh-huh.
This is so funny.
You think that suit with this guy is gonna get? Little Clint Eastwood there, I think.
I like how the timing of it is.
Uh-huh, right.
The stuff going on.